Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. We also have co-host Tim Hayes, and today's Aramaic Friday, so we have Dale Hoffman. And this is Friday, April 25th, 2014, and our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, that puts you in queue. We'd love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
I'm just wondering if maybe you turned on a microphone. It just sounds like some driving noise in the background.
So you, it is too noisy. Michael, it's too noisy right there.
My phone is too noisy?
Yes.
So I'm hearing
unless somebody
noises
else,
in the background.
Somebody maybe doesn't have their thing muted.
Mute everybody.
Okay.
No, I'm still hearing somebody driving. Ah, there it goes. That's it. All right. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. We're delighted that you're with us, and we're honored and blessed that you choose to share this time. Working with the ancient Aramaic language and the concepts of how the world works, what the game of life is really about, and in particular, how to forgive. And, of course, our definition of forgiveness is different than the world teaches. We're just... Repeat that forgiveness has nothing to do with letting somebody else off the hook. It has to do with removal. So when you think forgive, think remove. Remove what's in your structure that doesn't belong there, the thing that's causing your turmoil, your trauma, or your pain, as opposed to letting somebody else off the hook for what's going on inside of you. Because, of course, what's going on inside of you is going on inside of you. And what this empowers us to do is to return to the full experience and full expression of human life. In human life, we have an easy experiential definition, hold a newborn child. That's what we're looking to restore to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And so let's say a quick hello to Dr. Tim and see how the young man be, and then we'll invite Dale to say good morning. How are you this morning, Dr. Tim?
I'm well. I'm driving. It might be my noise that's too much for you. So I will just listen.
Hi, sir.
And I look forward to listening into the show today.
Awesome. Delighted that you're here. Thank you. Blessings. All right, then. Let's say good morning to Dale. Dale and I spoke a few minutes ago, and he was telling me that he's getting a number of questions on this Easter occasion with the completion of the Easter celebration, and some of the specific ideas that are expressed in the Greek scriptures and how different they are in the Aramaic. So, Dale, I'm going to turn it over to you. Good morning. Welcome.
Hello. I'm also driving. It's funny, everybody's driving. I'm in Virginia on my way in the Shenandoah Valley on my way to New Jersey, and I'm getting pounded on all sides by rain, so hopefully I'm not too noisy right now either.
Would it be safer, especially being pounded by rain, to maybe stop for a little while to do the talking?
No, that's the thing. I'm getting pounded by rain. I'm not moving, so yeah.
Okay.
We've got a huge, massive thing all around us in all directions. But yeah, I mean, it always happens every year around. It always, literally, always happens every year around Easter, where I start getting a lot of questions about Jesus' words on the cross, which I'm sure you probably get a lot too.
For sure, I think they're very important words to understand the truth of.
Yeah, and, you know, there's kind of two schools of thought on it. We've got the classic school, the sort of, the Greek doesn't even really come into this because even when you look in the King James Bible, it's not even in the Greek there. It actually still came from Aramaic or Hebrew. And those, like, not even speaking about that last thing, you know, into your hands I commend my spirit, but when he says, what was translated as, my God, why hast thou forsaken me, is what it says to King James. Thou wasn't even a word back then. Neither was half. But those words in Aramaic are very very peculiar. It's very telling. The sounds in Aramaic would be Eyal, Eyal, Lamana Sabachthani. Eyal, the last word really is the key, the Sabachthani, but Eyal is a word that means, it was translated as my God, but the word God is problematic there because God, it comes from that Germanic Good, which means somehow one thing is better than something else. The word God really isn't what the all means. The word God that we use today is more of a concept. It's kind of a finger pointing at the moon. Eyal literally is a sound. Eyal or El or Al in Aramaic is literally a sound that means singular. It means something that's not divided, something that is whole, something that is complete, and something that is one. And so what he was actually saying is the one. And then we've got that word lamana. Mana is an interesting word because mana, properly pronounced, we call it manna here in the West. Mana was what fell from heaven. What mana really means in Aramaic, it means true sustenance from within, but it also means what is it, or why, or for what purpose, meaning that what mana really means is something that I don't really know what it is, but I'm sort of open in this moment to finding out what it is, basically. But the key word here is sabachthani at the end. Now, sabachthani is an interesting word because in Aramaic, and this is something that I don't even know if you even realize, because you don't go as deep into the language itself, but this is something great for you to even grasp, Doc, is that that word sabachthani, the root of the word sabachthani is shabuk, which, of course, in the present tense, the imperative is the word for forgiveness. That's the word forgive, shabuk, shabag. Shabag would be in the past tense. And what forgiveness means, literally in Aramaic, it means cancel, it means leave, it means untie, it means to set something aside. It could mean, although you'd kind of be going out on a limb, it could mean save, to save something. But it doesn't mean really save as in save necessarily something and hold it. What it actually means is to push, save it by putting it to the side, push it to the side. So all of the nuance of what that word is, when people say forsaken, why have you forsaken me, that's actually not incorrect because what it means is canceled. Why have you, you can say, What this really is this is that moment when it's in still point breathing, it's in meditation, it's in deep prayer, whatever the moment is for someone when you're sort of going backward off that cliff with your eyes closed, like I always say, it's the portal, it's the tareya. This is the moment when we get really deep into an experience where we start to lose sense of ourself as a human person. As in, I tell people in deep meditation or even in still point, every once in a while, someone, their first still point experience, when they pop into it, they'll take this huge gasp and jump back out of it and go, oh, my God, which is kind of a panic thing. And that's what this is. It's that moment where your concept of who you are, your concept of the world is starting to fall away. Now, when, of course, no matter how conscious or awake you are, when part of who you are exists within your master, your ego, when that starts to rip open, the veil is ripped in half and torn away, part of you is going to be a little bit befuddled or confused in that moment. But not only does it mean that forsaken as in canceled, why am I not feeling the presence of God right now, but it does also mean set aside or something to the effect that, oh, okay, now I'm getting it now. This is the purpose. This is why I'm here. But the thing is, it really is not in any way one or the other. It's actually, that word phlebotomy has qualities of both processes. Not only a realization of, oh, okay, now I get it. This is why I was set aside. This is why I was, you know, quote-unquote saved. But also within that is a little bit of a, almost like a, abile would be the second beatitude, a mourning or like an ultra-hyper processing of this moment, because everything that I've known to be myself up to this point is literally in the process of death. It's literally in the process of being ripped in half, the veil's being torn from top to bottom, and regardless of how ultra-super-conscious you are and able to hold that love present, there's going to be that tearing away in the moment. So it's actually got both of the qualities. So one of the things I've been telling people, I posted it on Facebook last night after all the questions, I was like, it's not really one or the other, but actually that word contains the qualities of both. And if we could just get that, you know, it was very poignant for me because this week I was writing quite a few pages about how one of the issues with translation is if you either haven't had the experience or aren't able to comprehend exactly what's being said, regardless, as an example, somebody can go to school and learn Aramaic, they can learn whatever language they want to for 60 or 70 years, they can go for 7 decades of their life and still not really understand what a word on a page means if they have no concept of its experience, regardless of its definition. Just because you can define the word does not mean that you actually understand and have a direct experience of its meaning. And that, to me, it brings me right back to what you've always been saying about, look, if you got to build the brain cells. If you don't have the brain cells, you're not even going to hear it. You're not even going to be able to comprehend it.
Right. Well, if you put this in the context of his earlier words where he says, in order for you to live, you've got to die. And when we live out of the non-being self and it collapses, which of course is what happens in a microsecond in the forgiveness process, as that self collapses, then comes the full-blown experience of our human lives. And so what I hear in that moment is, and oftentimes it is great pain that causes that non-being mind that wants to run to collapse, is the death of the old self and the awakening of and the bringing into the world of the truth of the state of being. And so set aside for this special purpose. You know, when I look at the Greek translations, it fits very well with the theme of the Greek, which is keep people in fear and hopelessness. You know, if you look at the average person who is called a Christian, they have been taught that Yeshua is God. So how do you suppose this leaves somebody if now God is abandoned by God? For this you have forsaken me. If God on the cross is forsaken by God, what chance does anybody have? And it definitely, I think, opens a space for hopelessness in people, as opposed to taking to the next level of the experience of the true presence of human life, which is what rebuilt his body out of that experience, because he refused to give up that active presence of love. We have an eternal force operating in his physiology to rebuild his physiology, and a collapse of the old self. And I think the realization, I got it. This is what you've been saving me for. This is what you've been reserving me for or set me aside. What an awesome experience. And, of course, one cannot even, as you're saying, cannot even think about that experience unless they've had that experience, at least to some degree. it tends to come, in my experience, in my own world and working with people, is it tends to come in stages. When the old self dies, collapses, and the awareness of the new self is brought into this body-mind unit. And it is like you can't even start to put it into words because it is so monumental. And so my understanding of that phrase is, one, that it wasn't set out of dejection, and two, that it's addressing the creator, the eternal creator, and it's like, oh, I finally got it. This is the full-blown experience. And how do you put that into words to people who are still living out of their hostility and fear? Pretty tough to do. How do you get that concept across? Pretty tough to do. Until people have done enough work that they have had at least microseconds, seconds, minutes, maybe if they're really lucky, hours, where the non-being self has collapsed and the true being has come back into full-blown expression. I remember working with a gentleman in Sarasota several years ago. We did a week-long series of workshops at Unity in Sarasota. And this man attended every night and bought a full set of CDs at that point, and he was heading to Orlando after the workshop series. And he came back. We were doing another series up in Tampa the next week, and he came back to share with us that he had left listening to the CDs and had that experience of the mind that usually chatters and natters and complains and whines and sees things wrong and, you know, comes up with its hostilities and fears, that had totally collapsed in him. And specifically, he said that where he was supposed to go to work in Orlando, he went to a park and he just sat and was steeped in and observed the beauty around him in the park. And in particular, there were two young boys who were on a bicycle, and he shared with us that normally his mind would go into upset at their lack of safety and the danger of one of them on the handlebars, and you better get off that handle. That would be his normal response. Instead of that response, he shared just so beautifully and so clearly that he just watched these two kids, and as opposed to seeing two kids on a bicycle breaking the rules, he said all he saw was beauty. He just saw the awesome presence in watching these two kids on a bicycle. And that state continued for him for the time he was in Orlando, and it was several days, I don't remember exactly. And he shared that. He then went home. He lived over in the Tampa area. He went home, and when he got home, his son had done something, you know, like, that he considered to be really way out of line, and that just brought all his rage and upset forward, and he lost the whole experience of the beauty. Nothing in his world was beautiful anymore. My understanding of what happened to him is that he was able to get into a condition of accessing and keeping active Rakma until something resonated his rage that cracked the activity of Rakma, and all of a sudden now, instead of a sweet, beautiful, trouble-free, wonderful world, he's now in a world of rage toward his son. And I know that that time period for him, as it is for virtually everybody that I've worked with that's experienced it, became a beacon for him to return to. And it took him some time and a significant amount of work to get back to that state. And, you know, I'll often have people who will ask me, well, what does it take to do that? What does it take to get back to that state? Well, it's a wonderful thing. I've never tasted it. Give me some. And unfortunately, it doesn't come in a pill. It comes out of a series of circumstances that when a given individual's energy field is ready to open to that, it opens. And, you know, in the intensives, we often will get people who have that opening. Do I know why they do? No. What we do in our intensives is introduce every factor possible, from forgiveness to high nutrition to living in the commitment to really being in the space to setting Rakma to doing the love exchange with people on an ongoing basis every day, everybody in the room. And there comes a point where when somebody's ready for it, bang, it opens. But there's no intellectual process. There's nothing you can do to force it or make it open. And there's another young man from Sweden. We've heard Peter on the show several times, and he's shared a little bit of that experience, very intellectual, and kind of an aloof kind of guy. Came and spent 2 years at Heartland, and then toward the end of his first summer, the whole time, through the intensives, he's coming to me, you know, every few days with, Michael, what is love? What are you talking about? You keep talking about love. What? And then, in a still point breathing session, it blocked. And he had the full-blown direct experience that I think Yeshua was having that said, I got it! And he got it. This guy who's normally aloof and just very nice man, he's a healer, just a really sweet guy, but normally just very aloof and distant, all of a sudden, he can't help himself. He's got his arms around everybody in the room, and he can't stop saying the words, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. He's in that experience. And, you know, to me, that is the goal of all of the tools and everything I've pursued over the last 45 years, and it takes the engagement in each of those tools, and as it was said in the scriptures, nobody knows the time or the moment. There isn't some set of rules you can set up for doing it. You live as a human being, and when that non-being self collapses, you know, Jeannie was fortunate, maybe she'll share for a minute. The first time we had met online through eHarmony.com, and the first time we met in person, I did some still point breathing with her. Jeannie, you want to share that a little bit? Is your mute button on, sweetie? Are you there, Jeannie?
Yeah, it was. I'm here. It was just a totally different experience of physically feeling the love of God and feeling worthy of it. It was an experience that I had not had before. You know, I knew it intellectually, and I knew it within, but to actually physically feel and experience the love of God was phenomenal.
Now, just knowing that we are continuously steeped in that presence and that the world teaches us to get into our heads and try to figure it out, where oftentimes when somebody's in a still-point session and is in a great deal of resistance, I will use my elbow to go into some tender places in an intense way, and there comes a point where the mind just, the non-being mind just stops, and bang, that opening occurs. I suspect from the words that he said, that my understanding, of him, yeah, that's the experience he was having. Your thoughts?
You know, you hit on so many valid points. I wouldn't even, it's almost, one of the things that really resonated for me was when you, there's a few things, like, to set even, like, even more of a base in here. One is that it's a microsecond. It's not something that you see that moment when it happens. It's, we start to pursue it. We think it's like a goal, a destination. Number one, it does. It comes in degrees. It's not pop all of a sudden, okay, my work is done. Now I can goof off because of enlightenment. But it's degrees. You don't see them coming. It's very feminine, meaning it's like it comes up behind you and sort of wraps that, you know, she, you know, the Holy Spirit, Ruka, she comes and she wraps her arms around us. And it's amazing because in still point, one of my best friends, actually, Mike Ormond, he's actually called into the show before. For years, you know, Mike had been listening to my stuff. He had read your read Why Again, I don't know how many times. He had seen your DVDs. He had listened to some of your CDs, watched your stuff online, you know, heard it secondhand from me, and all these things. And he was having these great, amazing experiences. But then, flash forward a bit to 2007, which is actually a flashback now. I don't know if flashback's the word, but go back to 2007. It was October of 2007, and I did a weekend retreat at Mountain Light Sanctuary outside of Asheville, and Mike came to it. And Saturday morning, we did our first still point breathing session. And he went through his process. It didn't, from my perspective, you know, you really don't know what's going on as a facilitator a lot of times. For the person themselves, But at the end, I kind of just walked back downstairs into the kitchen and was talking with some of the people after we had gone through a little bit of a processing session. And Mike couldn't really say anything about what happened for him. But he looked at me, and he had this look in his eyes that was that look that I'm talking about. It was a combination of, oh, whoa, hold on, this is what it's all about. This is what you've been talking about. And there was also that little bit of almost like a mild panic, not a fear, but just the moment when there's so much energy moving through the system that it's like that point of entropy, that evolutionary moment of truth, right on the point of overwhelm almost. And he's like, I need to talk to you outside right now. It was almost like, you know, the school teacher or something coming in, the look he gave me in a way, but with this light in it. And he takes me out on the porch, and the only words he got out were, I get it. And then he just completely lost it. And Mike just fell in my arms, and just decades of guilt and shame and fear, and also decades of sensing that he was right next to it, right near that presence, that true oneness. All of a sudden now he's in the experience. And that's one of the most treasured, cherished moments for me in the work that I do. You know, whatever in my involvement in this work is being able to be a facilitator and being able to be a part of those kinds of openings and experiences for people. Honor doesn't even begin to encapsulate how that feels for me.
I hear you loud and clear, and it is fabulous from another point of view, and that is as the facilitators, we get a bite, we get a piece, and that's pretty awesome too. You know, the other day I had a friend who was asking, you know, about that experience. Well, how do I get there? Like the intellect could possibly figure it out. And, you know, of course, the answer is all of the above. And as I got quiet and was meditating on that question from him in his presence, the lesson, what is the world, came flooding into my mind from A Course in Miracles. And, you know, the ancient scriptures talk about the end of the world, and people think that it's the blowing up of the physical planet. But when you realize there are two different worlds, there's the world that the Creator created, and then there's the world between our ears, and the end of the world. Nobody knows the moment at which it will come. You know, for Mike, at that point, he's got this sense, it's right there, and then bang. His world as he knew it is ended. The gentleman that I'm talking about who drove to Orlando, his world was ended. His old world never came back full force. I say from my own experience, that every time I've had that experience, and I've been blessed several times to, you know, with the fact that I keep doing my work, I keep doing all of the above, it visits me. And I don't have it 24-7, 365. If I knew how to get it 24-7, 365, there'd be no question I would have it. But I just keep doing my work. I can remember the first time for me that space opened. And in that space, I had a silent voice that explained everything I asked and a visual picture of the answer to my question. And I can remember asking in that state, I mean, if we, and I know you've had that experience, so if we multiplied the beauty, the sweetness, the most awesome experience you could have by 100 trillion, 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 we're maybe starting to approach what that experience is. And I asked in that moment about the Creator. And I was shown the outline of a physical figure, like a human form. And then very carefully the voice said to me, if, not that the Creator is a physical human-like being, but if the Creator were human. And then I was shown an index finger kind of curled around the thumb, and that index finger just glanced off of the shoulder of that human form. And there was this little swishing sound with it. I can remember this goes back about 30 years. I can remember so clearly. And what the words that came with it were, if God were a human being, with everything you're experiencing right now, and then this finger just glance at the opportunity. You've just glanced off of the shoulder of what lies in store for you, of what's possible. And it comes in tastes and bites, and as one does their work, if they really do the work, now if somebody's stuck in the intellect and they're going to try to figure out the meaning of words, as we've talked about before, it doesn't take us there. It's the actual experience. And I also asked about the ego at that point. And I was shown this playful little puppy with something in its mouth. And here I am in this, there isn't a word big enough for the delight, the joy, the aliveness, the excitement. There isn't a word that even scratches the surface of it. And this little puppy's running around with something in its mouth, and I can remember very clearly looking at this puppy, jumping up and down, trying to get my attention, distract me. And it was like, are you crazy? I'm going to give this up for that? You've got to be nuts. And, you know, the stuff that was going on in my world at that point, before that experience, it probably took me about a year to get to the point where anything that had mattered, you know, in terms of is it worth some sort of upset, it probably took me at least a year to get to the point where I could get into some sort of disturbance about something. It was an awesome year. And I realized that this lesson from the Course, what is the world, is really the crux of the message there. And what that lesson says, if you look at the Course in Miracles, it says, the world is false perception. The only thing that the whole body of work is aimed at is collapsing our false perception. So it says the world is false perception. Stop trying to forgive anybody out there. Stop trying to forgive yourself, but forgive your false perceptions. Apply forgiveness and remove the root of false perception, and a whole new world opens. And you'll say, oh, for this you set me aside. I got it. So the world is false perception. It is born of error and has not left its source. In other words, everybody who's in some sort of terror and trauma that wants to blame somebody else is in their own unique terror or trauma, fighting their own internal battle, doing this to themselves and having no recognition they're doing it to themselves. It's all everybody else's fault. So it is born of error, and it says it has not left its source. And then to me, a really key line in that particular lesson, it then says, it will remain no longer as the thought that gave it birth is cherished. We have this digital to analog converter called the human mind. It takes the thought we think and turns it into the world we see, the world of false perception, which does not leave its source. Apply forgiveness to that thought until it's gone, and that world collapses, and you enter into what you're designed for. It is akin to holding a newborn child. It is that active presence of love. And as long as we rely on or cherish our mind based in hostility or fear, that world's not available to us. And so when the Course says it will remain no longer than the thought that gave it birth is cherished, there's the real key. Well, how do I do that? That's what I need to do. Well, you do all of the above. You take the commitment, and maybe one day when you pick the commitment up and look at your spouse that you're frustrated at or you think you're frustrated at, and you say one more time, I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect in my thoughts, my words, and my actions, whether I'm in your presence or not, I cherish you. Then all of a sudden, the thought that produces the whole world of false perception called frustration toward a spouse is now no longer cherished. That whole world collapses, and an opening to the direct experience of love occurs. Perhaps it happens when one does a worksheet around that and cancels the goal for their spouse to be perfect in their mind, whatever their perfection is. You know, they're supposed to do this or that or that. And that collapses the cherished thought of frustration towards spouse. Perhaps it comes when somebody does a codependence to interdependence worksheet and gets down to the point where they start writing what they're going to, how they're going to follow the advice they've given to their spouse. And they go, I'm wanting you to be more gentle with me. I got it. I'm going to follow my own advice. Maybe that's where we stop cherishing the thought that keeps producing a world of frustration. Perhaps it's when I enter into the Beatitudes and I go, you know, I realize I really need to acquire a sound and purified mind in order to get back to this. What do I have to do that? Ah, it says breathe. Ah, I'm going to breathe. And maybe that breath is the one that takes you out of cherishing the thought that produces the world you see. And all I can say is that in 45 years, I've moved in every direction I could move to find a way to get people to give up their cherished thoughts that make them think that, you know, their hostility or fear is the least bit of service, protects them at all, or does anything for them other than destroy their human lives. You know, so to me, that's kind of what he's talking about there. It's like, ah, I got it. The full-blown direct experience of the active presence of love. What an awesome gift to get. And, of course, that Easter energy is still moving in the earth. In the earth.
What he's basically saying here is, look, my God, you know, the one, the sacred, the eternal creator, I get it. This is what forgiveness is. He used the word forgiveness to say that line. And if you're in that process, if you're focused on the being left set aside, as in on an egoic level, like, oh, my God, I'm not getting the attention I need. How come I can't feel your presence? It's not going to feel like it would, as if you're actually willing to be open and let go in that experience to actually be in the forgiveness process, to realize that it's not about being set aside as in pushed to the side in some kind of negative way that we need our ego, like our sort of little kid ego needs to be satisfied, but rather being set aside as in, oh, hold on a second, when I let go, I'm finally going to experience the very thing that I've been looking all this time for, and the reason I haven't been able to find it is because I've been looking for it in Alma, in Aramaic, Alma, which is the word. I've been looking for it in time and space, and of course, look at this, and it doesn't always happen on the first worksheet. It happens when you're open, which can be the first worksheet. It can be the first still point session. But it's all about being open. And it's amazing when people, when we're doing the worksheet, since people get to that goal, I talk about it all the time on the show, people are like, hold on a second. You're telling me to cancel the goal? And, like, that's forgiveness, right? Okay, well, you're going to have to explain that one to me. And, of course, that would be the idea of, okay, what do you, forgive and forget, right? I hear all those same phrases. People lock in on them because they're looking at it on an egoic level. They're looking at it from the map. They're looking at it in the world, not realizing that what we need to do is let go of the world so that actuality, so that that direct experience of presence can come through us and we realize we are that presence. It's not somehow outside of us, but that favorite phrase that I have from St. Francis, what you are looking for is what is looking. And it's just that, it's that microsecond of openness. And that's why people come to me all the time after still point. They're like, oh, my God. They're like, I felt it for just a nanosecond, but I felt more presence in that nanosecond than I have after years and years and years of all kinds of church work, all kinds of psychotherapy, all kinds of self-improvement seminars and workshops. I got more out of that microsecond than I did out of decades of all the other stuff. And the reason for that is that stuff is of the world. And this is out of the world. This is out of the mind. And you say it all the time. You got to be out of your mind to really comprehend what this is all about.
And then you hear Yeshua saying, I am in this world, but my world, my reality is not of this world. I don't play the game you're playing, cherishing the thoughts you cherish from your generations. It's a whole different game. Dale, how long do you suppose it would take being in the ivory tower, studying with the intellect, all these Aramaic words, to have that experience?
You know, I take a lot of hits on, I say this with a smile on my face now, though I didn't years ago. I take a lot of hits, like on sort of message boards and things from the real scholars. I put that in quotes. The ones who, they're able to, as an example, they can see the words on the page, and they can tell you all these possible definitions. But I don't mean this as any kind of a personal attack or anything in any way whatsoever, but they're still not willing to be open in the experience because they already know what they know. They've done the process of polishing the outside of the cup, orders that old, I believe it was a Zen story where it's, Wayne Dyer says it, where he talks about here's the master and the young student, the young monk, and the master is pouring a cup of tea for the young monk, and the young monk is sitting there talking and talking and talking about he knows this and he understands that. You don't have to tell me about that because I get this part already. And the teacher, the master, just keeps pouring and pouring. And all of a sudden, this hot water from the tea goes outside of the cup, onto the table, onto the skit, this young monk's pants, and he jumps up and he's like, what are you doing? You're pouring the cup all over the place. And he's like, young man, you are this cup because you are so full of what you already know, you're not able to let anything else come in and through you. That's exactly what this is about. It's not about the intellect at all. It's not about that. It's about being open to let it speak through us. And it's something that I've learned to forgive in myself. I've learned to, and that's why I can say this with so much of a smile, is that years ago I would just constantly bat the ball back, and I eventually realized, hey, wait a second, they're hooking something that's already inside of me. And I started doing that. I started getting down, writing this down and going through the forgiveness process, realizing that what was happening is if I'm going to be able to share the depth of what these teachings really mean, then I'm going to have to share that as my life. I'm going to have to share that in my presence and in the energy that people sense when they're around me in situations like this. If I'm screaming and yelling about something that I know at the top of my lungs, which I also just put in my book a couple days ago, I wrote really in-depth about the experience I had in Tampa with a biblical languages symposium, I think is what they called it. And I had the audacity, well, first of all, I sat in the back row because I didn't want, I wanted to be able to have a quick escape. I did that with your thing, too. When I first went to Y again, I'm like, I'm going to sit in the back row. If I got to leave and escape and run out of the room with my hair on fire, I'll be able to do that. So I did this, too. But this symposium was after Heartland. This was like 9 months after Heartland in 90. Well, it had to be early 96, I think it actually was, like late winter. And I noticed over and over that day that the guys that seemed to scream the loudest and fight the hardest with the most information about their point, they would silence the other person that they were debating with, and that other person would shut up, which meant that the one that was louder with more pounding information won, essentially. And I did this really weird thing. Here I am, I'm the silent Jesus guy in the back of the room, and everybody's looking at me and kind of ignoring me at the same time. And I distinctly remember saying, you know, they were talking about love your neighbor as yourself, and I didn't really understand it completely in the Aramaic yet either. I was just barely scratching the surface at that point. And I said, you know, I see a lot of arguments here, and the thing that seems to resonate for me here is this looks to me like what he's talking about in these two commandments. It seems to me that he's talking about some sort of a process or some sort of an experience rather than something that we should be understanding like with our intellect with what's on the page. And it was such an interesting experience because every face in the room turned, looked directly at me, and I actually remember my face and my neck getting hot. I was steeped in the potential of forgiveness, though I wasn't forgiving in that moment. And everybody looked at me, and the strangest thing about the experience was that they looked at me as if I had lobsters crawling out of my ears, and then they looked back at each other and started arguing again, went right back into the argument as if I didn't even exist. They weren't even open to the possibility that this is maybe a how-to or a tool for actually getting to what he's talking about, the moon itself rather than the finger pointing at it. And it was interesting because I felt so much humiliation in that moment. And what was interesting, it took a couple of years to realize that it was the same humiliation I often felt in church when I would say, hey, wait a second, I don't think that's what this means. I'm thinking it means something a little deeper, something closer to this. And the teacher and the other students would look at me like, you know, you're an idiot, shut up, that's not what it means. But I was able to remove those roots, and what that's been able to do is enable me to stand there in the presence of that kind of unconsciousness and hold that space, hold that love active and present, knowing that I'm right there in the portal, I'm right there in the space between this world in quote, and Rachma, that space of the open flowing presence, that shining force of heat and light from the One. And I'm able to be in that space and allow that moment to be so fully present that the veil is not able to basically recoagulate or recrystallize itself. And that's what that means. It's us, only one of us, if at least one of us can be there in that presence, to be able to hold that love, conscious, active, and present, there's no chance of recrystallization. The veil's not going to all of a sudden solidify and recoagulate into yet another bushel basket. And that's what I've actually been able to do. And a lot of times people will, or every once in a while, someone will stand up or send me a message, some sort of an attack message, and I'll say, look, what your words and your actions are telling me with this hostility and the spirit that you're throwing at me is that whatever it is that you do know, and this is not any kind of a personal attack on you whatsoever, whatever it is you do know intellectually in your mind is in terms of the definition of what this means, it obviously must be either wrong and incorrect translation, or you're just not able to comprehend what's in front of you, because it's obvious that you're not in a space of love right now. So by me holding that place, I'm able to open the space for them.
Awesome. Well, a couple of thoughts on what you just said there. One, it was interesting. Yesterday's show, we talked about the definition of the word debate, which means to beat. And so in essence, here we have people debating, beating each other over the words love your neighbor as opposed to loving your neighbor, having the direct experience of that. And a couple of times I noticed, and one of the things we talked about yesterday is Shakespeare's "My words fly up, my thoughts remain below." And it sounds like, you know, being one who was out of harmony with the general drumbeat, going to a different drummer, one that really wants to have the experience, that you suffered several personal attacks. And notice that on two occasions in the last couple of minutes, he said, and this is nothing in the way of personal attack. I might suggest that there might be some really good fruit that will come from maybe doing a couple of worksheets around personal attack, either you attacking or someone attacking you. And perhaps there's another layer of that, because your word going back to that twice, there just might be a little niggle in there yet that if you surface it, will be another piece of important work.
And I was 100% conscious, as I said it both times, too. It's amazing that when you're conscious, you catch it as it's going through. And I was, 100% both times. I was right there when I said this. It's a cool experience.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. So Jeannie tells us we've got a caller. So should we go check in a caller, or do you got anything else to share? You got a caller for us, Jeannie?
I do. It's area code 970. You're on the air.
Hi, Michael. Dale, Jeannie, Colorado.
Hey, Brad.
Welcome, Brad.
I've got a kind of a question for you, Michael and Dale both. You know, Cindy and I were rewatching The Laws of Living again. A lot of this came up in kind of what you're talking about today, and holding that space of love and setting the filters of Rachma and Kubha. And when you're in the presence of others that may be resistant and they're just trying to, you know, trigger you with their anger, their fear, their hostilities, and so forth. And what you mentioned in your words there, you said that we will get to a place if we can hold that space of love, build those brain cells to see the decoding of a lot of, you know, the words in the scripture. And I guess my question surrounding that is that to get an accurate knowledge of many of the words from Scripture is to see the truth in them versus, you know, getting an accurate translation from the Aramaic into English. Are we able to do that more accurately when we set those filters and we can live our lives out of that and get out of our bloated nothingness? Absolutely. Those things start to come to us and their true sense of what, you know, of even what God was talking about and what Yeshua was talking about.
You're right on track. And, you know, Yeshua says of himself, you can deny me, but don't deny the one who sent me. And he says, I come to connect you to the spirit of truth, and that is Rukkah. And, you know, Rukkah in Aramaic, is the words that have been translated as the Holy Spirit, have nothing to do with the disembodied spirit being, but rather speak of an actual feminine elemental force in us. And if you really listen to it, it's awesome. It says, undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. And so we'll get, you know, then this is what he says, I'm working. In fact, at one point he says, I've got to leave because you guys are paying so much attention to me. You look at how many people are still paying attention to him instead of what he said to do, the work he said to do. So they're sitting around, you know, praise worship, and instead of doing what he said to do, he said, I'm leaving because you're paying too much attention to me. Get that connection I'm trying to give you, and she'll teach you directly. And to me, that's where the forgiveness process shines, is because it allows us to collapse the part of us that thinks it's got to be somewhere outside of us and gets us into a real connected space that is what he designated for us.
You know, my piece in, or my sort of my perspective is something that was so profound in Woodstock, Illinois a couple of weeks ago with Dr. Tim at the Unity Church, that right in the beginning I said to everyone, I said, so here's Dale, the Aramaic scholar, but the first thing I want to ask you to do is to let go, and let go of the words that I'm saying, let go of understand what it is that I'm saying about these words and their definitions, and instead be open to the experience that's flowing through you. And I say, you know, I call it the fate or the cosmic question mark. I say, look, if you understand intellectually everything I say over the next 2 hours, then you've missed the point of everything I've just, the whole point of me being here. But if you get to that 2 hours, get through the 2 hours, and you almost don't have a clue what I said, but you can feel presence, and you feel that open flow, you feel that feminine Rukkah flowing through you, and yet you don't understand anything that I said, that is something, that's what's real, that's the direct experience. And even though I say right in the beginning, let go of the words and the definitions, and instead let them, in the words of the Lakota, let the wind blow through you, let these move through you, let these be a space for opening presence, not yet one more belief system for you to lock down on. And still, just because it's habitual, it's the way people live, they're still holding on to the world, holding on to the definition. And it's interesting because right before the break, right before we left, I said something to the effect of, now in the second half, maybe you'll allow yourself to really let go. And people looked at me like, what, huh, what did he say? And we go to the break, come back, and, you know, during the break, a lot of people are like, hold on a second. And afterwards, you could actually feel that open space, that palpable presence, kind of like a Why Again workshop. You get up to the point of canceling or defining and canceling the goals, and people are resistant, and, oh, you feel the heat up. And then when enough people do that, they get in the process of canceling and actually going through the forgiveness, it's almost like this cool cleansing rain that descends in the room. And it's such an amazing place that you can't get to from your head. You can't get there from a book. But the book is a finger pointing at the moon. It's an avenue. And, of course, going back to the original language that it was spoken in, that street and that path is going to be much clearer than a translation of a translation of a translation, or a map that has been scribbled over with different lines put over it. Just imagine a nice road atlas. If you're having the original road atlas and what that looks like, as opposed to one that's had lines scribbled and corrections and different colorations and things in the margin, eventually you can't see the map anymore. And that's exactly why I do what I do with the Jesus teachings, is letting people know it's not about the words on the page. It's about the direct experience of presence when we realize what those words on the page really mean experientially.
Yeah, I get that. I've experienced that, you know, more and more as I keep doing this work.
Hey. I was just cheering you on that one, Brad.
So it's and just to let you know, I've got 3 more signed up for my first meeting Monday too.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to your ongoing reports and just being there and holding the space for it. It's just beyond fabulous.
Yeah, because I want
to
start
a whole global program.
Yeah, I want to start with why is this happening to me again? And I thought I would follow that up with the laws of living. I just love what you say there, and it explains so much and kind of where these guys are going to have to, open their mind to, and hopefully soften themselves, to be able to hear it without becoming offended by it. It's going to be quite a challenge, I know.
I would also thank you up to the challenge, sir.
I was going to say that when you get in those moments when you feel like right now the Law of the Living DVD is the thing that's really speaking, keep watching it and keep watching it and keep listening and keep listening, because that's the moment that we're talking about. That's the moment when the world falls away and you're in that ripe, open, present space. And if the thing that's resonating and popping for you right now is the Law of the Living DVD, then over and over and over, that's the moment to really build more brain cells than you've ever had a chance for before. And then eventually that's going to sort of pop a little bit less, and then something else is going to start popping, and then you start to go into that experience of ripeness with whatever that is. That's exactly what Joseph Campbell meant when he said, follow your bliss. He was saying, go to whatever it is that you feel fertile and ripe and open with right now and grow that experience, cultivate that. And when you've got it with something like the tools like Laws of Living or any of Michael's DVDs, I mean, it's an opportunity that a lot of people in this lifetime, unfortunately, may never get. So it's a beautiful place to be, open to.
It ties right in with the whole theory of Montessori education. And as I understand it, basically, instead of, well, we've got, X number of 7-year-olds in front of us. They must all be ready for math. Let's stuff their heads with addition, subtraction, multiplication. Well, they must be ready for English. In Montessori education, they allow the child to lead them, and they observe the child and wait for the signals that come to the child that show that they are in a sensitive period for math. One child might be in a sensitive period for math at the age of 3, so in a Montessori school, they'll be put into an environment where they'll experientially learn math. Another child might not be ready until they're 8, so they won't get that environment until they're 8. And it's not, we put them all in one bag and say, well, you all have to learn math today. But there are sensitive periods where our energy system is open to that. And that's a nice catch, Neil, to put out that stay with the laws of living and stay with it until you've totally and completely devoured the energetic experience of it. And then that will open the next piece of your puzzle. So that's awesome.
Thank you both for your support. I appreciate it.
You got it, absolutely. All right, we're down to the last minute or so, so I'll just say that, to reach Dale Allen Hoffman to see what his schedule is and to order his materials, www.daleallenhoffman.com is where you can reach Dale. And, of course, whyagain.org. All the forgiveness work is there for free. Just jump on it. Hit the bullseye, start opening the links, and listen. And the tools are there, and we're here to support you 5 days a week. If you're going to be up in the Tri-Cities area in Washington State next week, we'll start there a week from Sunday with a full series of week-long workshops in Tri-Cities area. Check out our website. And give the world the absolute best gift you can possibly give. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.